We are indeed thrilled to have everyone with us. And I think, is that Jeff back there? Hi, good to see you. It's always nice as a family. Sundays is like a, well, a big family dinner, isn't it? Where you get to see everybody and catch up with the last week. And of course, remember the most important supper of our week. And that's where we get to remember Jesus. So as we just did, thank you for your presence. And we've been talking while I've been preaching about discipleship and what it really means to follow Jesus. And not to go over everything we've already talked about, but we have to understand there's a path of discipleship, because a disciple is a follower. And so we've already discussed that to follow Jesus, you have to leave something. Now, that something that you must leave is different for every person. For that rich man, it was his money, wasn't it? For someone else, it might be their status, it might be an addiction, it might be just their, who knows what it is. But whatever stands in way of you serving Christ or following him serves as our functional idol, doesn't it? Because idolatry is that what we worship instead of God. And so we have to leave in order to follow. And then we see that we don't follow just so we can be named as disciples of Christ. We follow so we can learn. And we're learning not just so we can gloat and say, well, I know more than you, because Paul says knowledge puffs up. But we learn so we can live like Jesus. Because really, that's the key of discipleship, as we see on the side here, that one definition of discipleship is to cleave steadfastly to one, to conform wholly to his example in living and deed, in a fault necessary in dying. See, you're becoming a follower so you can live like Jesus. And then finally, why do we want to live like Jesus? Because we're going to live with him someday. Since our ticket is already punched, we know we're going to heaven. He's asking us, learn to live like me now. Glorify me on this earth and help lead others to heaven as well. Now, what we want to follow, the thought today, this morning, is just the idea of following in order to learn. When you look in the New Testament, and I've tried to count these, and I get different numbers, but the word disciple in the New Testament is used over 250 times. Now, that's a lot, isn't it? Now, you can count them. That'd be a good homework assignment for someone, because I don't know if it's 261 or 260. I get different answers, but 250 times. Now, how many times is the word Christian used in the New Testament? Does anyone know? Once? Twice? Three times. They're first called Christians in Acts chapter 11. And then in Acts, Felix? No, Agrippa said, they almost persuade me to be a Christian. Last time by Peter himself in 1 Peter chapter 4. If any man suffers as a Christian, don't be ashamed, but in this name, you'll let him glorify God. Only three times, 250 times, Christians are referred to as disciples. Now, is that important for us to note? Well, then, the idea of discipleship is essential to our learning to become, you know, Christians that are worthy of Christ. Now, so what is a disciple? What does it mean? We're going to see that primarily, disciples are learners. And they learn from the master teacher. We'll open your Bibles to Matthew 4, and I'll just introduce that thought. In Matthew 4, the last verse before the Sermon on the Mount goes, and that sermon goes chapter 5, 6, and 7. And we read here in verse 25 of chapter 4 that great multitudes followed him. And here's that concept of following Jesus. Now, they're not just following him to their local coffee shop or an assembly hall in town. They're out in the villages. They're following him through the country. And now we find that he takes them up on a hillside. But they followed him from Galilee, Decapolis, and Jerusalem, and Judea, and beyond the Jordan. They're coming from everywhere. And notice what happens in verse 1 of the very next chapter. And when he saw the multitudes, he went up on the mountain. That'd be a hillside. Dave's been there. I've been there as well. And you get to see over the Sea of Galilee. And after he sat down, his disciples came to him. So you got to have this picture of these hundreds, if maybe thousands, of disciples gathered below him in this natural amphitheater. and opened his mouth, he began to teach. Now, I don't know why you've come to Christ. I don't know why you're here. Everyone has their own reasons and purposes. But primarily, we come to Christ to learn. He saves us, yes, but if that's where we stop and say, well, thank you for saving me, I'll just go on my merry way, I don't understand the essence of discipleship. It's to follow Christ so we can learn from him. And following Christ, and when we learn from him, he's going to challenge everything that you thought you knew. All our presuppositions, the things we were taught were right in the world, he'll challenge all of them. He'll ask us to re-examine them and turn them upside down. And in that process of learning from Jesus, we become new and better people. We find the things we're so desperately looking for in our lives that the world promises but never delivers on. And that's why more and more people are coming to Jesus, because they realize there's got to be more to this world than what the world offers. And so they come, yes, to find some life with God and forgiveness and some internal peace, but they're looking for direction. They're looking for better lives and better marriages and better families. They don't believe anymore that, boy, you can't be married past your 30s because all marriages are doomed to fail. How many times people have that attitude? I'll stay married. If it doesn't work, we'll just, you know, hit the eject button, divorce. But yet among Christians, you find people in this audience have been married 50, 60 years. Come to Jesus and learn how to have a marriage, how to have better children, how to have a better life. See, disciples have that privilege, don't they? And so that's all we want to share this morning is, as disciples, we come to learn from Jesus so we can have a new and better life. We can live just like him. And so, first of all, as we saw, that we're learners. And that's the message that Jesus has been offering to people ever since he walked on this earth. I find Matthew chapter 11 very curious. And I want you to turn there, where JC read this text for us in our scripture reading, where Jesus first makes a prayer to God, where he praises our Father. But then there's an invitation in verse 28. We sing a song based on this verse. Come to me, all ye weary and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. See, we have a group of people that are following Jesus, and they're tired. Maybe because they can't figure life out. Maybe because there's requirements put on them by the religious people of their day that are burdens. They can never feel right with God. And it was because it was a salvation by works back then. Maybe it's because they're so poor, they're just wore out trying to just provide for their family. And their children are saying constantly, Daddy, I'm hungry. They're wore out because they're being oppressed by the Romans who are taxing them heavily. And then without any option, recruiting them into their armies. And they have to go fight a war for a country that was occupying them. I mean, they've got burdens on their life I don't think we understand, but that doesn't matter, because when you have your own life, your burdens are yours, and they're as bad as anyone else has had in the world, because they're our own, aren't they? So while we look at others and say they're worse, we never want to minimize what we're going through. As Jesus says, come to me and I'll give you rest. Verse 29, here's the paradox. When I look at it, what? Take my yoke upon you, and learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you're going to find rest in your souls. Now, do you understand what a yoke is? A yoke is symbolic in their day for a burden, because you hook up some oxen to a yoke, and they pull against it, and they pull a heavy cart. They pull a load. So in their day, when they spoke of my yoke, they're talking about the burdens of life that they're pulling, they're having to carry. So Jesus says, if you want to find rest, take my yoke. What? Take my burden? Doesn't that seem contrary? Take my load? And here's what he's saying. Unlike the world and what it's offering you, you can't carry that load. We just fall down over and over and over. We fail, fail, fail. But my yoke is easy, isn't it? It's light. In fact, when you take my yoke, you're actually find rest. And that's the paradox. Take my burden and you'll find rest, the rest you're desperately looking for in life. But what stands between yoke and rest in our text? You see it? Take my yoke, and you're going to find rest. What stands in between those two concepts? What is it? Learn. Learn from me. Disciples never stop learning. I don't care if you've been a Christian 5 years or 50 years or 15 years or 50 years. We never stop learning. And it's not just for the thrill of discovery, because that's exciting in itself, these new concepts and figuring out life around us. It empowers us to live a life that is better and that is peaceful and full of rest. It makes life exciting the way God meant it to be. So Christians are learners. We never stop learning. And that's what Jesus is asking of us. Now, I used to think, and forgive me, that Christians were not thinkers. They're just told what to do, and they just, you know, blindly follow. Have you ever thought that or been told that by the world? And again, it's another lie. Jesus, throughout the scripture, Matthew chapter 9, verse 13, go learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. Now, that's curious, because he told them sacrifice. Why are you saying I want mercy and not sacrifice? Later in chapter 12, he said, if you had learned what that meant, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you wouldn't have condemned the innocent. So your behavior is contingent upon you learning the truth of how to live. In Matthew chapter 13, after Jesus gave the parable of the tares, you know what his disciples came up to him and did? They said, explain to us the tares. In other words, they didn't get it. They were clueless to what it meant, so he had to teach them. We're called as disciples to think. Christians are thinkers, first of all. We're not just robots that do what we're told to do, but we're called and asked to use our minds, our brains, to think things through. And not as the world would think, portray us, that we're just like blind sheep. Think about Matthew chapter 18, verse 12. What do you think, Jesus says, if a man has 100 sheep and loses one of them, will he leave the 99 and go get one? He's asking you to the reason. Why would a person give up the safety of 99 just for one? Well, the only logical answer is because the value of just one. He uses the same type of language in Matthew 21. Turn there if you would. Matthew 21. And Jesus is always challenging his listeners. And in such is the case here. Verse 28, what do you think? Now, the word think means to reason with the mind, to think through. A man had two sons, and he came to the first and said, son, go work in the field today, or in the vineyard. You can see this scenario playing out. Well, the son answered, said, I will, sir. But here's the problem. He did not go. Well, the second son came, and he said the same thing to him. Go work in the vineyard. Well, the son said, I will not. Now, it seems like a lot of families have the good son, the bad son. And here this son said, no, I'm not going to. But he's really not the bad son, because even though he said he wouldn't, later it says he regretted it and changed his mind and went actually in the vineyard and worked. Now, here's the question that Jesus wants you to think through. It's a great question. Which of the two did the will of his father? The one that said I would, or the one that said I wouldn't? Well, the answer is obvious. The one that said I won't do your will is the one that did his will. And you say, well, that makes no sense. Well, it's because God just cares less about what comes out of your mouth. He's more interested in what we do with our life. Isn't that not correct? And you learn those lessons by, well, learning from Jesus. And that's what he's asking us to do. Paul reasoned in the synagogue daily. Jesus, Paul said in Philippians 4, 8, 9, whatever is honorable, what is lovely, it's true. He says, think on these things. There's another word, consider, Jesus uses a lot. In Luke chapter 11, he uses things, inanimate objects and animate objects. Well, the lilies. He said, consider the lilies. That means think through, turn over in the mind, consider. Consider the lilies of the field. Well, why do I want to consider a flower? Because they're beautiful? No. Because they are here today and they're gone tomorrow. Isn't that right? That's why some of you don't buy roses for your wives, because you're too practical. Because they're here today and they will tomorrow. And you're trying to be more pragmatic. No, when it comes to wives, learn that the impractical speaks louder than the practical. Buy them roses, right? But we diverged, okay? Flowers, they're here today and gone tomorrow. But at the moment when they bloom, what are they? The most beautiful thing. We were out hiking yesterday and just look at that flower. Wow, how did God do that? Wildflowers are even prettier than domestic ones, aren't they? You go back tomorrow, they're withered and gone. What's the lesson? He's asking you to consider. If God would clothe them, how much more important are you than that flower? What's the message? He'll take care of you, won't he? Then he said, consider the ravens. Now, ravens weren't, an exotic bird that everyone wanted to domesticate or sold for a lot. But do they have to plant and go to work and commute and do all those things just to make a living? No. What do they do? What do ravens do? They simply eat. Now, who provides the food for them to eat? God does. What's the message? He said, consider the ravens. Think about this. He says, why are you worrying about what you're going to eat? Because if God takes care of a raven that dies tomorrow, will he take care of you? And we say, well, yeah, I know that story's true, but have you thought it through? Because if you're anxious, you haven't thought it through. If you're still worried about your life, what you're going to eat or what you're going to wear, you haven't thought it through. We're always learning. The peace of mind comes, the rest from the soul, when we understand who we're following. We're following Jesus Christ. So when we consider all these things, I hope they're just impressed with the fact we're here to learn. To glorify Christ, glorify God, to go to heaven. But we're here to learn. And I think the biggest tool Satan has to get us from following Christ is lying to us, giving us bad information, or getting us to stop learning altogether. Just quit. Because then we don't transform. Well, let me ask then, how do I learn? Well, if we follow to learn, I'm not trying to be silly, but we learn by following. They come together. And I want you to see that, what he says here in the next point. We follow Jesus to learn, but we learn by following. And I'm just going to give you five different things real quickly. That, first of all, the word disciple, when you take the English word, it comes from a Latin word meaning pupil. Disciple, pupil. Now, what's a pupil? It's not the thing in your eye. What's that called? But a pupil is a student. So when you talk about a disciple, you're talking about someone who's learning. So in their day, the whole concept, they had not professors at universities, but they had rabbis, which is the word for teacher. And the way you went to school with the rabbi, you literally followed them around. You followed them, and they would talk to you, the rabbi, the teacher. And Jesus said, you call me rabbi, and such I am. He accepted that role because he knew he was the good teacher. Now, while you're following him, you're asking him questions, you're observing what he does, and then he'll give you tasks to do, and you do what he did so you can learn for yourself. And then from that, I just wanted to give you these things. First of all, you follow to listen. How many times in the New Testament you have that phrase, he who has an ear, let him... That's a funny statement, because everyone has ears. But does everyone listen? No, sometimes people have hard hearts. Some people aren't listening right now. And that's fine, because I don't want you to listen to me. Listen to what Jesus says. But you're distracted by thinking about what you can do next. Maybe you're on your cell phone right now. Please don't. But people don't listen just because someone's talking. Is that true? And Jesus came down as a master teacher, and people still didn't listen to him. But you follow in order to listen. And so that's what we have to do is fill our life, long for the pure milk of the word. So we don't teach and preach about read your Bible, just so you can know the Bible and quote it and beat people over the head with it. No, we encourage you to read the Bible so you can listen to Jesus. And you think about what you're saying, he says, and you can then make application in your life. Second of all, we follow to watch. How many word pictures do you see in the New Testament when you look at Jesus? You look at what he did and you go, why did he do that?
Now, I say that because that's what his disciples did. A case in the point we keep using is the Samaritan woman. Jesus was weary. That's interesting. As a human being on this earth, he got tired out. So he goes to Jacob's well, and there's a woman there. And we know the culture in that day, you don't talk to women, much less Samaritan women. And then you don't use them as a testimony, as a witness, because they're not reliable in their culture. And Jesus breaks down all those cultural traditions by talking to this woman, requesting her, then teaching her, then asking her about her husband. And what are his disciples doing all the while? What is he doing talking to a woman? Right? The other case is this little guy named Zacchaeus. Now, Zacchaeus was little in stature, but he was a big sinner. He was regarded as the biggest sinner of his day because he was a tax collector. So when Jesus is walking through Jericho, Zacchaeus is so small, he gets up in a tree and he says, Lord, you know, he just wants to see Jesus. And the Lord says what? Zacchaeus, come down. I'm going to your house today. So he receives him in his house, and who does he invite over to talk with Jesus, to listen to Jesus? His tax gatherer friends, his fellow sinners, right? And so now the religious elite are looking in and go, look at that guy. He's eating and drinking with sinners. And you might go, why did he do that? And if you don't have an answer, you don't understand Jesus. If you don't understand I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you don't understand why Jesus ate with him. And we'll continue to condemn people that do not need combination. They need Jesus Christ. And we'll continue this attitude. It's us against them. But it's not us against them. It's us against Satan. If we're on Jesus' side, Jesus was on everybody's side. And we'll be on their side as well. That's what it means to learn to Jesus by listening to him and watching what he does and asking questions. Why'd you do that? What are you trying to teach me? And that's why we ask questions. The disciples always asking questions. Again, the parable of the tares, they said, explain this to me. They also asked, teach us to pray. He said, we don't know how to pray. We see you praying all the time. And we looked for you one morning and couldn't find you, found you praying. Teach us how to pray. And so they're always asking them questions. You know, he said, let's go to Jerusalem. I said, hey, they're trying to kill you. Why do you want to go to Jerusalem? He had to explain it. He told them at one time, the Son of Man must go to Jerusalem, suffer many things by the chief priests and the elders, scribes, and be crucified and be raised up on the third day. Now, their concept of a coming Messiah, the last thing, this king would die by the hands of those that he was sent to. So even though his words are plain and simple, it says they understood none of this, but here's one of the exceptions, but they were afraid to ask. The reason we don't know is because we don't ask the right questions. Don't be afraid to ask. And if you encounter a religious teacher or someone thinks he knows the Bible and is offended by your questions, go find another teacher. Really? Because your faith is not in them, and if they can't be challenged by your good and honest questions, find another teacher. Because Jesus patiently answered them all, didn't he? It's not us against them, it's us against Satan. Then we follow to practice. This is really important. When they were following this rabbi and asking him questions, watching what he did, saw who he engaged with, he would send them out to do the similar things. So the disciples were sent out on limited commission, 2x2, to go teach others. And they come back all excited and said, look, we did all these things. So it's by practicing what you've heard and saw done that you learn it for yourself. It's application. No application, no learning. I think BJ might have used this in your mentor's class, and that's on Thursdays. We're having older Christians mentor to younger Christians so they can see, watch, and do. Thursday? Tuesday, thank you, at 11 o'clock, right here. But I shared with him, Dan Davidson, a good friend of ours, we saw him this last weekend. He's a dentist, and when he was doing his internship at the University of Washington Hospital, one of their mantras from all the people that he shadowed, he followed, you know, dentists around, doctors, and they say, see one, do one, show one. over and over and over. You see me do it, then you do one, whether it's an inlay or an extraction or whatever they're doing, dental work, and then you show someone else how to do it, one of your fellow interns. See one, do one, show one. And they said, if you can't show someone how to do it, you have not learned it. Now, if that's the standard of learning in the world, the professional world, yes, but shouldn't that be at least our standard? Show one, do one, see one, do one, now show somebody else how to do it. Sometimes we don't even get to the do one. We don't do it ourselves. Now, Jesus has a lot of powerful lessons. Someone wants to strike you, they're mad at you, and what does he say to do? Turn the cheek. Now, what does that mean? Ask questions. And then try it. Rather than speak back and angry and get vengeance, walk away, turn the cheek, or let them do it again, and see how that transforms you when you're able to do that. When someone speaks evil of you, what does Jesus say do? You bless them. You speak something nice back to them. Now, that's one of the hardest things in the world. When someone's really giving it to you, whether at work or a friend or at school, and to come back and say something genuinely nice, not patronizingly, but genuinely nice that blesses them, that's hard. Because at that time, you're full of anger, aren't you? And you want to strike back. But to bless someone that curses you means you've learned from Jesus. It's transforming. How about forgiving someone? It's easy to be around people that do us well, but it's hard to be around people that are always hurting us. It's just common knowledge that we extend ourselves to people that we like because they do things nice, they're nice, but we avoid people that hurt us or just always making life uncomfortable. Now, who did Jesus choose to walk with on this earth? The people that always made life easy or the people that made life difficult? Seems like it was the latter. Did he ever have problems at work? Let me think. One guy denied him 3 times. Another guy was stealing from the treasury box. He had problems at work, didn't he? But what did he do when it came to forgiveness? He forgave. That's the hardest lesson in the world sometimes. But until you do it, you haven't released the power of sin over your own life, but you haven't learned to be like Jesus. So see one, do one, and then show one. Then that's why we follow to teach others. That's our last link. We're called as learners to share what we learn with others. It's interesting. Our life on this earth, as Ramsey said, the finance teacher, we spend our life trying to impress people we don't like, using money we don't have. And isn't that true? And Christians have wised up, and they realize the only person worth following and impressing is Jesus Christ. We're not looking approval for men, because we'll never get it, because they really don't care about us anyway. We're looking for approval from Jesus Christ. And that's where we're going to have joy in our life, is when we find it from him. So let us go to our last point as we think about this idea of learning. And we're going to dig just a little deeper, the dynamics of learning. Because when Christ asks you to follow him, we're going to face some of the biggest core issues in our life. He's not just going to talk to you about peripheral things, how to drive a car. Although that's important in our society, but in the big picture, does it matter? No. He's going to challenge you with the most important core principles of your life and ask you to re-examine them and establish new priorities and new lessons. And from that, we're going to learn application. And I want you to consider with me Hebrews chapter 5. So turn your Bibles there. Because we talk about paradoxes, this is a puzzling thing at first glance. When you look at this text, it's talking about Jesus in verse 7. In the days of his flesh, he offered up both prayers and supplications with loud crying and tears to the one who was able to save him from death, And he was heard because of his piety. And although he was a son, he learned obedience from the things which he suffered. And because of that, being made perfect, he became to all those who obey him, that's us, the source of eternal salvation. Now, I hope these things jump out at you as they jump out at me. That here Jesus, first of all, speaks of his humanity in the days of his flesh. While he walked on this earth, his life was frequented with crying and tears. What does that mean? It was not easy. He found himself many times crying to God, the one who could save him, because it was hard on this earth. He went through things just like you and I, without exception, probably to an nth degree. Not to minimize what we're going through, but he saw it even more. And the only way he got through it is two things. First, he prayed and cried to God, help me, because I'm weak. I don't want to fall and stumble here. We see that in the garden, right? Before his death, he prayed to God and cried and wept his tears of blood, but he cried three times, the same prayer, let this cup pass. I don't want to die. I don't want to be shamed. I don't want to be humiliated. I don't want to go into the grave and have to fight Satan. Three times he's asking to be excused. But then the next thing that is just curious, because that's amazing. Sometimes you think Jesus is superhuman because he's God in the flesh, but no, he lived like you and I on this earth without exception. Second thing is he learned obedience. If that doesn't confuse you or challenge, you're thinking, I don't know what you're reading, because Jesus had to learn to obey? Excuse me, he's the Son of God. He knew what he was here for, and that was his job, as just kind of lined out for him, so he just did it and went back home, right? It's like you going to work and checking out at the end of the day. Sometimes we get the idea that's how easy it was. And for us, it's different. Here it says he had to learn something. And what was it he had to learn? Obedience. Obey who? God, his Father. So many times in the New Testament, he says, I never do anything by my own authority. I only speak what the Father tells me to speak. I only do what the Father tells me to do. But here this text tells us there's sometimes he didn't want to do what the Father wanted. Sometimes he's tempted to do what he wanted. And how did he learn obedience? By suffering. Suffering. And when we avoid suffering in life, listen real carefully, you're stepping away from the most important life lessons you could ever learn. When we are passed through a valley that is full of trials and storms above and enemies on the side, and we say, I don't want to go down that valley, and so we circumvent and go another direction, we are missing out on some of the best lessons we could ever learn from Jesus. He learned them by walking through that path, didn't he, to Jerusalem. And on the other side of that path, he got to go home to glory. So that's another thing I want to suggest to you, that when you avoid that path of suffering and trial, because nope, that's not for me. I'm going to live like the world. It's easier for the short term. Not only are you missing out on the lessons you could learn, but you're missing out on the glory, the blessings at the end of the path. Because some of the greatest blessings that you could ever find in life are at the end of that valley that you have to struggle through. Jesus learned obedience by the things which he suffered. That's why he says the disciple has to deny himself, desire to follow, deny himself, pick up his cross. I don't know what it is in your life that you're going to have to leave behind and what you're going to have to go through to follow Christ. So, man, you've never been wrong, preacher, like I've been wrong. You've never had a spouse hurt you like my spouse did. And you're full of anger, bitterness. So the last thing I'm going to do is forgive them. Oh, really? So you're saying to Jesus, I'm not going to listen anymore. I'm not going to learn anymore. Because Jesus says what? Forgive them. So that's hard, Jesus. You don't know how hard it is. Forgive them. Oh, really? You're telling me I don't know how hard it is to forgive someone? when they were mocking me and spitting me and scourging me, laying my flesh open, what could have Jesus done at any moment at that time? Called down those legions of 10,000 angels, said, that's it, wiped them out. But he suffered to learn self-control. I'll do your will and not mine. Wow. How can I ever find myself coming to Jesus and say, it's too hard, can't do it? But when you learn from Jesus and you follow him, you realize, man, I'm empowered. I can do this. Yes, it will be hard, but I can do this because I'm following the master teacher. Yes, it'll challenge me what's important and priorities in life. Another example of that is in John 13. I want you to read it on your own, but they go up into the upper room and they're all just taking the seats of position of honor, and no one ever showed the common courtesy to wash their feet, because in their day, you don't show them to the bathroom to freshen them up. You wash their dirty feet because they've been walking barefooted or with sandals, and that was just the courtesy. So Jesus, in the middle of the whole event, gets up, girds a towel, takes a basin, and starts washing their feet, and they're all just embarrassed. Why are they embarrassed? Because the rabbi is teaching the students. It gets to Peter, and Peter says, nope, you're not going to wash my feet. And Jesus said, Peter, you just don't get it, do you? If you don't let me do this, you have nothing to do with me. So Peter goes, all right, wash my whole body. He says, no, Peter, you don't get it. I'm not going to wash your own body. I'm washing your feet because they're dirty. Now, when he's done, he puts everything away and he asks a question. Jesus is always asking questions. One says to what? Think. He said, what have I just done to you? Now, if I was sitting there, I go, is this a trick question? Because he's washed his feet, but I don't think that's what he's asking. So who do you think would be the first one to raise your hand? Wouldn't be me. You embarrass yourself. You go ahead and say the wrong answer. What have I just done? He said, well, I'll answer it. I'll wash your feet as an example. Because I am the rabbi, and the greater never serves the younger or the servant. But here, the greater served the servant. I just turned everything, flipped them upside down, didn't I? You should have been washing my feet, but I washed yours. Now, what does he say next? You go do likewise. And when service, sometimes we're serving people that aren't very serviceable. It's hard to serve them, is what I'm trying to say. They reject it, they'll fight it, there'll be no gratitude. But in serving them and suffering ourselves, we learn life's greatest lessons. We become more like Jesus. So never, ever quit following Jesus. I don't care how hard it gets. I don't know how many trials you got. But look back and realize, man, I've learned so many lessons. And your threshold of tolerance of things you can deal with becomes stronger and stronger. You look back, that's easy, because after what I've been through. And isn't that true? Become like Jesus. Never stop listening. Never stop watching. Never stop asking. Always learn from Jesus. And never, ever stop doing. That'll be BJ's lessons tonight. Take action in your life. But it's the most amazing journey we can be on. And we don't learn information for information's sake. We're learning information for transformation. And that's what Jesus gives us. He's going to give us that necessary information, those truths of life, to transform our life into what we want it to be, but most importantly, what he wants us to be. Now, there might be some of us here that have never started following Christ. I plead with you. Just think on this. What are you going to do when you die? You say, what do you mean? Well, there is life after death. What are you going to do? Where are you going to be? Are you ready? What are you doing with your life right now? Are you chasing what the world offers that never will deliver, or are you following Christ? We have to think about these things. And for people that are even Christians, have you been following him honestly and genuinely? Are you the person that says, I will, but doesn't? Or are you the person that said, no, I won't, but ends up doing? So we could correct our course of life in a moment. And this could be your moment. Don't walk out the building without making a change in your life. Saying, Lord, I will. I'll leave whatever I need to leave behind, but I'm going to follow you. I'm going to learn from you so I can have the life that you want me to have. If that appeals to you, Blake's going to stand. We're going to sing this song, and we ask you to come forward so we can help you.